Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Pardon me while I heat a dab at the beginning of the show. It's all I have here. I'm usually like vaping or smoking a bowl, but all I got is the dab, so I don't want it to be too disruptive. So while I heat this dab, I'll let you know to please tell a friend about the show and rate and review us and subscribe and do all those things. We really, really appreciate it here at Growcast. Ooh-wee. Wolfman's on the line. How you doing, Wolfman?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
Fantastic, so as usual.
You don't have a an e-nail? You still got just a ceramic nail or what?
No, yeah, I got a metal. I got one of the old school titanium ones. Roasting at high temp dabs, dude. I'm old school like that. I love the e-nail, dude. You got the setup. You got the opium den setup, which is large glass rig, e-nail going, so it's ready anytime. But then you also have the rubber hose mouthpiece, so you can just like pick it up and like lean back and fucking like nod off as you're taking the monster dab that's ready to go, no blowtorch. That's what's up, dude. You got it figured out.
That's good for training wheels. It's good. That's it's easy to introduce people to dabs. It's not as intimidating to have the whole rig like right there in their face. You just give them the piece of the, like a hookah mouthpiece. And you're just like, all right, just suck when I tell you to suck.
Totally. And then you're not wavering around the hot metal either. Like, people don't realize, like, you can easily fuck your shit up with that.
Dude, I burned my hand the other day. I was a little stony reaching for a piece of nail that was sitting next to the rig, and I touched, like, the top, and I touched the top of the nail, and I got some circles on my finger for a couple of days. It was great.
Fun times, man. What are you dabbing on? Mystery wax as usual?
No. I grabbed some, I think it was like some strawberry banana something I got at the dispensary the other day.
Ooh.
But I ran out of that and now I'm smoking on actually some flowers. What is this? I think this is the super silver hash plant.
Nice.
Yeah.
Loving it.
And then there's some others. Yeah, I got something else here too. I don't know what that one is though. I forget.
I've been getting the live resin going with the dabs. It's my favorite. It's the really, really saucy, terpy looking stuff. Big fan of that.
The live resin's a whole different flavor profile.
Terp slurper for sure. Definitely a terp slurper. But but today we're not talking about terps. Today we're talking about seedlings and cuttings and all that stuff, because people are starting to get ready for the big season here. You know, we've touched on a lot of this stuff before, but we like to recover stuff for new listeners and, you know, just kind of check in on you guys and smoke up with you guys and remind you guys of some stuff that may have slipped your mind. So Wolfman, you have so much experience growing outdoor. I want to kind of pick your brain because I don't know how that stuff works. I was never involved in that world. What's going on when you guys, when the outdoor grower is first preparing to gear up for the run, do they usually have like an indoor space or like someone who's part of the team who has an indoor space so they can get the cuttings or seedlings kind of ready and vegetating indoors and then they move them outdoors, or does it vary? How does that work?
I mean, everything's going to vary because, you know, there's a million ways to do a million things.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on top of it, you should have a veg space inside because then you can control your temperature and your humidity and all that stuff still. And then you can control your light because your lighting is going to still be the most important. Because, you know, as the world turns, we have our days are shortening and lengthening and all of that stuff. So you need to know what you have to know your farm, your schedule, your light schedule, your sunrise, sunset. So you should keep stuff inside, until it's ready to go outside. And then, you know, when, if it's going to be full veg outside or if you're going to wait until it's, you know, more in that 12 range for, your light patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But some people put things outside, in greenhouses and then do supplemental lighting to keep, your plants awake. So it all depends, you know. You can do, there's many different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these outdoor growers, are they cutting off of moms most of the time to get a bunch of cuttings to fulfill their space, at least from what you've seen? I don't think there's a whole lot of like mass outdoor growers who are growing from seeds, right? Or do they?
Yes and no. I mean, I'd say in the olden days,
yeah, totally.
In the olden days,
for sure.
You know, a while ago when it was easier just to get seeds, it was a little more, you know, hush hush. A lot of people would grow with just seeds, but I'd say a majority of people for outdoor are going to be using clones, so cuttings off of mother plants. But there are a lot of people that do like to do seeds outside because, you know, your F1 is going to be the biggest, the most vigorous. You're going to get the most off of it. But then that adds another layer of weeding out males and, you know, making sure you get the right phenotype. And then sometimes even what you think is a female could herm or hermaphrodite on you later in the season. So it's, you know, there's many different factors in the different.
Yeah. The different style. Starting. Yeah. Or like getting off on the right foot sort of thing. So one more, we'll touch on outdoor growers one more time before we move into cuttings and seeds. A lot of these outdoor growers love to do some light deprivation strategies really quickly for those who might not know, instead of waiting for the whole season to kind of run its course, a lot of these outdoor growers start to get the plants to flower by kind of tarping them and blacking them off, to get them to flip and start producing so that they can harvest before the season's up and they can get the money quicker. And there's a lot of reasons to do it. Are you treating those plants any different than the ones that are going full season? Is there a different, I mean, obviously when you switch into flower, you're going to be using a different nutrient schedule, as you approach, harvest time, but is there any other ways you treat those different? Is that a stupid question?
No, that's a perfect, I mean, there are no stupid questions.
But what do you think of that?
You know, there's just stupid answers. No, I mean, more or less you're treating them the same up until that point. But if you can be on it, it's just like being in an indoor situation. There's a bunch of different companies that make auto deprivation greenhouses, or you can pull tarps.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Many different ways to black out your greenhouse. Or, I mean, if your plant is small enough, you could, you know, just put a trash can over it for a limited time. Or if it's even that small, you could even just like take it from, you know, outside and then roll it in your garage and make sure you get it nice and nice and dark,
light tight.
Light tight. But you know, also when you know you're closing off, when you're blacking out the area that your plant is in, then you also have to worry about humidity spikes and all of that stuff. So you should try to work out some kind of ventilation system. But then that you have to make sure is light proof and whatnot. Other than that, you know, it's the same thing. You know, you're just growing your plants to a point and then you're forcing them into flower, much like you are indoor. So instead of turning on a light switch, you're just pulling a tarp over your plants.
Right.
And using free light from the sun.
And then you're going with the nutrient schedule from that point forward and then flushing them while the other ones are growing. So that makes sense that it's just like everything else, but accelerated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you are going to see a slightly different growth pattern because the rays of the sun is giving us a different light spectrum.
For sure. Yeah.
It's at a different place in the sky. So the, you are going to see a difference between what you produce in like in your first depth versus your second depth, or your first depth versus your full term and that kind of thing. But it's more or less the exact, it's more or less just still growing the plant.
Totally. I want to touch on seeds. I want to touch on cuttings, and I'm going to start with seeds because it's certainly not my forte, and I don't know how deep you are into it either, but I've heard so much about it as of late. You know, back in the day before we brought Rob on, it was a lot of me and Wolfman. It was a lot of long periods of silence as we both became busy, and it was the occasional big-name guest that I kind of scraped together and worked to book. Now that Rob Smith has come on as executive producer, I mean, you fans have seen, and you don't even know the episodes that I already have recorded waiting to release. You know, we've got these huge names coming on, you know, like Subcool and Ed Rosenthal and all these guys that everybody knows, you know, Jinx from Jinx Genetics and all this stuff. There's so much growing from seed going on out there. I was so confined to the humble culture. Like, I've never really even, I hadn't explored outside of that. What amazes me talking to growers around the country is how many people are growing from seed and how many people say that they get great plants because they grow from seed. Have you ever grown from seed? Like, how much seeds have you worked with Wolfman? How well versed are you on them?
Not as versed as I wanted, I should be or want to be. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, I have popped a handful of seeds over my tenure, and played with them for a little bit, but I never had the greatest luck with the seeds that I had, or I'd keep them for too long and then they'd go bad. But no, seeds, I mean, that makes perfect sense that a lot more people are growing from seed these days, because, I mean, that's what sets you apart. You know, if you come up with a great genetic, you can name that genetic, and then it's just going to, you know, it become popular. It's just like, you know, everybody and certain people making certain kinds of dabs, or, you know, getting known for,
that's a good point.
Getting known for that cut, that flower, that, you know, whatever, that creation. So that, I mean, that makes perfect sense. It's, you know, the next big thing, the next, you know, the cool thing, the next cookie, the next Gorilla Glue, the next, I don't even know, wedding cake, Scooby snack,
Thin Mint.
I don't know. Yeah.
For sure. I totally feel you. That's a really good point. But I have picked up a couple tips and tricks when it comes to seeds. It really is, correct me if I'm wrong, Wolfman, but it really is more of an art than a science when you get seeds to pop. You know, like, the paper towel method is so effective if you can just kind of get used to it and get the hang of it and try a couple times. But I was speaking with guy who made the Big Roots product. He's a super soil guy, Patrick King, Patrick the Soil King. He's a huge fan of a product that you bring up a lot, Wolfman, which is Dr. Zymes Eliminator. He's a huge fan of that product, and he found a secret use for it, which was you can soak your seeds in it and before they pop. And supposedly it really helps them break through that outer shell or that outer herd or whatever it's called. Forgive me for knowing nothing. Have you heard that too?
I have not heard that, but, that does make sense. Over the years, you always hear people saying, you know, you want to soak your seeds in distilled water. You can take like some super high grit, like wet sandpaper, and scuff them up a little bit. You know, so you're helping weakening the outer seed shell or the husk or whatever you want to call it. And that just allows the seedling or the plant inside to break through just that much easier.
Wow.
Because sometimes, you know, I mean, if you have a seed for an extended period of time, you know, keep it right, or keep it in
preserved,
the right conditions. Yeah. They don't pop, you know. It is, like you say, it is kind of an art, but it is, you know, there's some science to it. So, I mean, the enzyme thing, that makes perfect sense. I've never tried that, but, you know, I haven't messed around with seeds for maybe a decade or so now.
Right. And I just think beats the paper towel and the red party cup. Like, that's how I've always had success. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe someone can write in and say that there's a, you know, there's a surefire way to do a better job, but that is what I've had experience with.
What did you do with it? You did a wet paper towel and a red party cup.
You know, like, once you have a little bit of seedling, the first thing that I plant it in is like the first transplant is I stick it in a red party cup with holes drilled in the bottom, full of like a soil that's like kind of packed.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I thought that the party cup was part of the seed popping situation. Yeah,
well, no, I drink the PBR out of the party cup while I do the seedling.
There you go. Yeah. And then wash it really good. Yeah. No, that makes sense. No, I was always a fan of like the paper towel trick, but then I put a moist paper towel in like a Ziploc bag with a little bit of air. And then you can put that, in a warm, dark place, or even that on top of a heat blanket or heat mat, and that seemed to, the warmth made those seeds pop so much quicker for me. I've done that, and then I've also done like the Jiffy, I think they're Jiffy Sevens, little peat pots that you add water to and they expand. I've used those and I've stuck seeds into there before. So there's many different ways to do seeds.
What about rooting gel with seeds? Because you use the rooting gel to get the cuttings to root. Do you think the rooting gel would have an effect on the seeds?
I don't know if I don't know the true scientific answer to that. I would probably lean against not just, you know, throwing that much hormone at it when it
well,
is
it's trying
like
to
on,
be birthed.
Well, it's trying to figure out what it's doing, because that might have effect on it. And maybe some kind of weird stress on it. I don't know.
That's a good point.
I don't know. I don't know enough either way to give an answer. So, yeah.
Write in, people. I would like to know about that. But soaking enzymes was definitely something interesting that I'd never heard before. And I will get some seed experts on the phone to give us some more tips and tricks down the road, just because I love how the show is developing. Speaking of developing the show, if you love Wolfman, and I know you guys do because we've seen the survey, how you can support Wolfman is, you know, I've said it before, these episodes are supported by donations. That's why we do listener questions. That's why we do grow chats. So, please, if you can kick a couple bucks our way or sign up for our Patreon for $1 a month, we would really, really appreciate it. So go to growcastpodcast.com and scroll all the way down and you'll see a donate button and our Patreon link. So please support the show and please support Wolfman. You know, that's how Wolfman makes his bones, is through this show. So is through these episodes in particular. So please, guys, we would really, really appreciate it, because I know Wolfman's helped you, and kick him back a little bit. And without further ado, let's move into cuttings. A nice little segue, the heat mats that you mentioned. Let's talk about heat mats, man. And we've talked about it before on the show, but for those who don't know, let's describe a heat mat. It's a it's like a plastic-ish sheet, a thin, how big would you like, say it is?
Well, different heat mats. There's many different companies that make heat mats. There's many different sizes and styles. Most heat mats usually are about the same size as a propagation flat. So like what are those, 11 by 18 or something
like that, yeah.
So, you know, they make single flat heat mats, double flat, and then I think they jump to fours, and then other companies have slightly other sized ones, and yeah, you can have, all different sizes.
And the theory being that if it gets too cold down by the roots aren't going to develop, they're going to have a hard time taking, and so if you put these heat mats under them, it'll encourage the growth, right?
Yeah, it just keeps the root zone a little bit warmer and everybody moving just a little bit more constantly.
What do you think about them in application? There's them in theory. What do you think about them in application?
What do I think of them?
Yeah, like
in the right circumstance, they are a necessity. But in certain circumstances, you do not need them.
Definitely. That's a great way to put it. And I would say not only do you not need them, but you could do yourself a pretty big disservice with them.
In certain circumstances, yes. If you're in like a super warm, super humid environment, you probably don't need a heat mat. But if you're like up in the, I don't know, northern part of anywhere.
You're in the polar really vortex, cold, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you're probably going to need a heat mat to get clones, going a little bit quicker. You probably need a heater in the room, making sure that your room is a nice, comfortable, 70-ish degrees anyway.
Yes, and that's what I want to say. Ambient temperature room, and then the temperature of the floor. Wolfman's always pointing out, if you're on a concrete slab, that's just going to suck the heat out of anything on the floor. So I think it's a combination of getting the pots up off the floor, making sure the room temperature is right. And if you're going to use a heat mat, then consider putting something in between the tray and the heat mat. That's what I had to do because they were too hot for me. You have to put some sort of barrier down a lot of the time.
Yeah, and all circumstances are different. Where some people use some cardboard, what I did is I had the metal silver racks you can get. A lot of people use them for storage or cooking or whatnot. Yeah, the metal. I think Costco. Costco sells a lot of them. You can get them pretty much anywhere.
You got cool cookies on them and stuff like that.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. But I cut some I think I had an old pallet piece of card or pallet sized piece of cardboard. And I just cut a piece that fit on the shelf, and then I put the heat mat on top. I think I put mine on top because then it actually touched the plastic, so it kept it at a better temperature. But in certain circumstances, I could see you putting it underneath, and that just help warming in the general ambientness of it all. But I don't think it would do too much.
I don't know, man. Those things put out a lot. That was my number one thing, is like, geez, this one's too hot for me. But I did have good success with it.
When you use, yeah, no, when if you're using a for like the Hydrofarm ones or the seed, the more, if you're using a larger than a single flat heat mat, you should get the thermostat for it. So there's a thermostat with a temperature probe that you put in the center of the, say it's like a four flat, you'd put it in between the middle two. And that'll help regulate the temperature of all of it.
I've never seen that.
So if you get more than a single flat heat mat, like the doubles, you should be fine without the temperature gauge or the thermostat. But if you're doing like a four flat or more, you definitely want to have that thermostat to go along with it.
So if you're doing cuttings, let's say, and you're using like a RootTech cloning gel, as we mentioned, and that's the hormone gel that helps roots establish. Do people have beef with those products? Because I know some people don't like the hormone products, but what about the rooting hormone products? Do people have beef with that, or is it like, whatever, it's just helping it get started?
Some people do, some people don't. It all depends on the person. There are, I think Olivia's is a vegan cloning gel. There's no rooting hormone in there. I don't know what is in there to help
work,
but I haven't looked at the label of one of those in many, many years. But then there's also like powdered products, like different Azos products. Yeah. Extreme Gardening makes one, and like Mr. Bees makes one. And I think a lot of other companies make an Azos product, and that, such as a nitrogen fixing bacteria. And then you can either mix the powder with water and water it in your plants, or I've made a paste with it. Just like a little bit of water and like, you know, two parts powder, one part water, and just make a paste, find that right consistency. And I've, you know, dipped my cuttings in that before.
Nice.
And that worked out pretty good. I mean, it takes a little bit longer than using the gel, and I end up going back to using the gel. But you know, some people like Dip and Grow, and that's more of a liquid. And that's just, you know, that one's been around forever. So a lot of people, that's just like the one that they were used to. It all depends on what you're used to and what works for you.
Right. I love that cloning gel. I had great success with it. And little tip, always slice your stems at an angle so you can get the maximum surface area. Plus it creates a little spear that helps you poke it into the cocoa cubes or plugs or whatever you're doing. But that was big for me. Cloning gel was big for me. Heat mats are useful sometimes. What success rate should you be hitting if you're doing everything right, as far as how many cuttings you put in and how many actually root?
Oh, I would hope for at least like 97 or higher, 95 or higher. If you're doing everything right, you shouldn't be batting 100. But you know, different strains are going to be more finicky. It's going to take you, you know, if you're new to taking cuts, it's going to take you a little bit of time to, you know, figure it out. You got to be on top of it. There's more to it than just taking the cut and then walking away. You got to mist them at the right time. You got to keep them on or off the heat mat, you know, for the right length of time. You have to water them when they need it. You don't want to oversaturate them and all that stuff. So there's
a little bit of art to it again.
It can be a full-time job depending on how many cuts you're taking.
Yeah. And again, how many cuts you're taking, more is, you know, more is better than less in this scenario, in my opinion. Interesting on the 95%, because the cocoa mats that I were using come in what, 24? Something like that. They come in like 12 and 24. And I would lose a couple every time. I would just lose a couple, right? Or if they're kind of wonky and like stunted, I might toss a couple out and just say, hey, these aren't worth it. Do you always take extra if possible?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would always take extra. Say if I was doing, you know, like 100 plants, I would take, you know, at least 150. If not 200.
Nice.
If I was doing 50, I would try to take, you know, 100. But, you know, like what I did is I was never the best with mothers. And then with having mothers, you have to have another separate room and all that and a veg space, and you need to be on top of them. And it was just something I was not the best at. So what I would always do is I would take cuttings off of my plants before I would put them into flower. So, you know, I'd shave the legs, clean them up real good, and then I'd take all those legs and turn those into cuts, and I'd always have way more than I needed, so I could pick and choose the best ones, and that would just make everything just that much better.
That's what's
and
up.
And usually, Yeah, and then, you know, you give yourself 2 months to take a cut and veg that cut up and get it going. You should be pretty close to being able to flip just that much sooner for your next run.
Yeah, totally. I love that. And there's a couple little tricks you can have when you're in there cutting. You've told me a couple nice ones. So you're in the room, you're pruning, you're doing the bottom pruning, and you're snipping these little guys. And instead of just crumpling them up in your hand like a bouquet of dead roses, what you can do is you can make a little dish or like a little saucer, and you can put water in that saucer. You can put some water and dilute some rooting gel in that saucer, or you can just put a wad of rooting gel. And what you can kind of do is arrange the cuttings to where the bottoms are sitting in the rooting gel. So you take a couple cuts and you put them in there, and then you continue around your room. And while you're, you know, taking maybe a long time getting these cuttings, the stems have something to kind of live off of, so they don't like dry up and die right away. And they also just kind of get going with those rooting hormones, so you're getting a jump on the process. That's something that I've had great success with. Maybe it's like placebo. But what do you do in that scenario, Wolfman? How do you store yours? Do you just keep them in your teeth?
Yeah, I don't, you know, treat them like an old bone. In the backyard, bury them for a little bit. No, I would, you know, more or less do the same thing. But I would take like a pitcher, you know, like a pitcher or water or like beer or whatever, or just bigger cups or a vase or something like that, or sometimes even a pot, depending on how many or how much I was trying to cut off my plants at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'd fill it up with some water. If I had some veg nutrient or some, you know, some cloning something like Olivia's liquid, I'd usually dump that in the water, or, you know, like you said, just a little bit of cloning gel. It's just going to help. And yeah, I'd take when I was shaving the legs, I'd take the bottom, so I just take them big and have some extra length on there, and I just throw that into the cup or the pitcher or the vessel, if you will,
like a flower. So they just kind of fill up in there like a bouquet.
Yeah. So yeah, much like, you know, when you get your rose or your bouquet of flowers home, you take them out of the thing and you put them in a vase and you just move them around a little bit. And yeah. So then you do that, and then you can take that out of the room, and then you have all your cuttings are underneath, they're already in the water. So that's going to prevent the air bubble from getting there and dampening off the stem. And that's going to help ensure that it's going to help you have better success with taking the cut. So so I'll just, you know, cut up a little bit higher up on that stem or branch and then go on from there. But that's a different conversation there.
No, I like that.
Maybe it's the next conversation.
Maybe it's the same conversation. We'll see. We'll do a part two. Yeah, but again, there's a lot of different ways to do it, as usual. But these little tips and tricks help. And one of the things that you taught me was about the water leaves. When you're taking these cuttings, you know, if you have a top especially, but also the bottoms, you know, you take a cutting, you stick it in, you have your little node that's going to propagate. But you also have those water leaves hanging off. And those water leaves can get pretty big. So what you told me is you can actually take some scissors, and instead of cutting off the water leaf or cutting it off at the stalk or whatever, you can just kind of snip the fingers, like cut off the fingers at the, let's say that first knuckle there. And that does a couple different things, right? Can you go into that?
So a lot of times when I'm taking cuts or even when I'm, you know, pruning plants, you can, you know, apply the same basic principle. You know, if say, you know, you've got a nice flower, like a big nugget forming, and then right above it, there's a bigger, not a water leaf, but say a mid-sized leaf from the next branch up. And say if you just remove like the middle finger and maybe the ring finger from that leaf, then that nugget or that flower would get a lot of good light. So I would take those two off completely. But for the instance of taking cuttings and whatnot, I never or hardly ever leave all of the leaf on my cuttings when I'm putting it in the tray, because they just overcrowd. There's a higher chance for leaves touching leaves. So moisture is going to collect, and you could, you know, you have run the risk of molds and mildews and white powdery mildew starting that way. But they don't necessarily need that whole leaf yet.
Yes.
Since they don't have a root structure, they're taking in all of their nutrient and their, you know,
their food, their water force? Is their food. Yeah. Their life force. Exactly.
From the leaf, but you don't want to take all the leaf. So yeah, I would take, you know, go down to that, you know, that first knuckle, maybe sometimes the second knuckle, depending on how much of the leaf that, you know, maybe take a third of it or so. But yeah, I would, a lot of times when I'm taking my cuts, I, you know, I'll have the branch, think of a, I don't know, think of like a 7-8 inch branch.
Uh-huh.
And then like, I'll look at the branch where I want it, like with the top of it, where I want my cut to be, and, you know, I'll pick my nodes. I'll visualize the cut. So then I will, prune or groom or cut off the knuckles, or I'll cut off the leaf and make the top getting ready to be the cut that I want. And then I'll go through and then I'll, you know, take my branch and I'll put
it
in.
Oh, wow.
You know, then I'll put it under the water and then I'll make my cut and then I'll take my cut. That one didn't, then dip it in the hormone and then stick it in the oasis or the cube or the, you know, plug or whatever I'm cloning into that way.
Right.
I, you know, I'll get the cutting ready first before I actually cut into the branch to dip it in the gel.
That is fascinating. Yeah, I totally do it last second before I plug it into the mat. So that's interesting.
I figured like the quicker you can go from cutting the branch to dipping in the gel and sticking, or pretty much the quicker you can get it from that cut to gel, the better you're going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do as much as I can before that point.
Mm-hmm. Love it, man. Love these little tips. And like you said, overcrowding in there, sometimes it's just not enough for the structure. Like there's so much weight on those leaves. And then, like you said, it's so crucial to take in whatever they can from their reserves, but also from the air. So the humidity dome, let's talk humidity domes. You got your tray and you got your cuttings sitting in there, and then you put that plastic dome over it with the little vents. Do all forms of propagation trays use that humidity dome? Like I've never used plugs or any of that weird stuff. There's always some sort of enclosure, right? Is there any cloning system where the clones are just like out in the air?
Aeroponics
would do that.
I mean, yeah, an aeroponic machine, you're not like, I know the Botanic Air one came with a dome, but it goes back to the same instance, like it's your environment. You know, if your environment, you don't need a dome, you're not going to need a dome if you're using any kind of propagation. But if your environment is, you know, you can't hold that humidity or you can't keep that little bit of warmth or that, you know, that moisture in that area where the cuts are, you're going to need a dome.
Yeah, you got to bring that in artificially one way or another.
Yeah. But, you know, when I was running an easy cloner, I never had a dome on that. And it just worked because there was all that extra humidity down where on the bottom or like inside the machine, because mm-hmm. it's spraying water all the time, just to keep everything moist. And you're always constantly pushing water and pushing food at the cuttings and encouraging them to root.
Right. Another source where they don't need to take it in from the leaves in the air as much. So that's a good point. But I've just had such good success with cuttings, sticking cuttings into trays with rooting gels. I really just don't have an incentive to buy a machine and relearn it. If you have a veg light, if you have a metal halide or even like a T5 or whatever, like you said, as long as you can fit some trays under there, just fill them up. Just take as many as you can and stick them under there. One light is one light, right? So that's what I encourage people to do.
Yeah, I mean, I've done it a bunch of different ways. I've never done the Rockwool. I've just never messed around with Rockwool in my career. But it works. It's just a little bit more effort, in my opinion. But yeah, like I said, I just had one of those metal racks, and I think I had four levels on it. And you have, you know, you can have like, you know, four to eight or 12 flats with cuttings in them, or maybe just do four flats with cuttings. Then you can have your teens on another flat or another shelf below it. And then that's all enclosed in a, 2x4 foot area?
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good point.
But yeah, and I enjoyed the ease of the easy cloners and the machines because it's all automated. And as long as you make sure that the water level is right and you're not, it's not super hot or you're not, you know, boiling your plants, machines are great because you can just take them and forget about them and come back and you've got, you know, a cutting with a 2-foot root mask hanging off of it.
Yeah, you're right. There is some especially in the beginning, there's some guesswork, if you will, with the humidity domes as far as keeping the vents open. If you let it dry out too much, you can get in there with a mister, you know, just a spray bottle, and maybe mist them, or maybe mist the underside of the humidity dome if you do let it get too wet. But if you do the vents right, and you have,
if it gets too dry, you want to be.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say if it gets too wet? I'm fucking dabs.
Yeah. No, you want to be missing them every couple of days anyway, because that's what's giving them a little bit of food. You know, you have a super mellow, like Olivia spray or something, and just give them a little tiny bit of food, because then they'll take that in and helps with the rooting just that much better. But yeah, you want to mist them either just with plain water or just a little tiny bit of food.
Right.
Probably just with water.
And I found that to be, as long as it was very moist in there, you don't need to do that very often, I found anyway.
Correct. Yes, correct. Yeah, if it's too moist, you don't need to mist them. But if it gets too dry, you should just give them a little bit of humidity. Helps them out.
Totally. And when do you start spraying them with, like, beneficials, or, like, start feeding them? What's the next step when you're looking at these clones and some have survived and you're seeing the roots come through? When do you know when it's time to transplant? When do you start hitting them with beneficials? What's next?
It's depending on, I mean, if you're in a plug or something, or in like some oasis or something like that, you want to, you definitely want to let your plant, you don't want to get, everybody gets very excited very quickly. And I mean, I'm guilty of this too. You just want to just go, go, go. You're like, oh, it's doing its thing. Like, let's go. You're
quick start.
Yeah. You just want to get it over, get it done and get it on to the next step. But let it take its time. say if you're in a plug or a little bit of oasis, like once you see the roots starting to, get to the edge of that plug or that cube or whatever it's in, then I would take that, if you're going into soil, then I would take that and put it into like a 3.5-inch pot or a solo cup or something like that, or 4-inch pot, and then let it grow up a little bit more in there, and then eventually go to your next step, go to like your 3-gallon, your 5-gallon, whatever you're going to do, and keep vegging it and get it a little bit bigger. But I wouldn't start feeding it until you get it, your soil, if you're using like brand new soil, and most soil has a little bit of food built into it. So if you're taking your cutting and you're just transplanting it in the soil, in essence, you've got like, I wouldn't necessarily start feeding it like heavy food for at least a couple weeks. I mean, you could do like some tea. Tea is always good, but you don't want to start giving it too much. You don't want to hit it with way too, you don't want to hit it with a bunch of a bunch of like high humic acid or something. That's just going to break down everything that much quicker and force that into your plant. You just want to let it kind of do its thing and just kind of grow mellow. You slowly increase the food.
Yes,
you don't want to just go right into it.
And it's a good idea with the tea and the Tappan Roots. Big fan of the Tappan Roots line. Any other products you want to drop before we get out of here? A Chickamasa scissors. Make sure to use those when you're cutting. Those are shit. And then the Root Tech is what I had success with, even though some people might, like you said, maybe there's some people that got beef with it. Olivia's. What other products?
I would, when you're taking your cuts, I like using a sterile scalpel or a razor blade, but you just want to make sure that you don't have any of the oil on that razor blade that it's going to come out of and come with in like the multi-pack.
Interesting.
Be sterile when you're taking your cuts. I like to take my cuts underneath, like in a pasta plate under the water, so then you're having even less of a chance for that dampening off or air bubble to get up in the stem and happen. I like Tappan Roots. They're all purpose for soaking my media or helping with just plant health and whatnot. But there are other ways to facilitate the same effect.
Process. Yeah.
Tappan Roots is just salicylic acid. So I believe you can get that from like Western Family aspirin or Bayer aspirin, just a generic non-coated white aspirin, I believe, is the same thing. Definitely check your labels to make sure you're reading the right thing, and don't take me for
Dr. Wolfman
voice value.
Yeah, totally.
I like that. I don't know, Olivia's liquid, I was a big fan of. Use what you like. It's gonna be very it's going to dictate your region and your regionality is going to dictate what products mm-hmm. and what companies are around you and what products are going to work better for you. Because if you can get, you know, say there's somebody that's, you're looking at two different products and one's like made right down the street and the other one's made halfway around the world. Obviously that one that's made right down the street is probably going to be fresher and newer. And if they're equivalent about the same, you know, give it a whirl, do a little side by side, but you know, make the judge that works best for you. And you know, trust, if you can find a good shop or a good, you know, partner or good friend that knows what they're talking about, they're not trying to push random things on you. That's always a good help as well.
Love it. Sagely advice as usual. Thank you, Wolfman, for taking the time to do this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Everybody out there, you know what to do. Growcastpodcast.com. Take the survey. Click the survey button to take it. Click the survey button. Sorry about that. What else do we got on the site? Donate. Yeah. We'll click the donate button. Click the Patreon button. Help out Wolfman. Get the Wolfman his bones. Let's see. At Growcast on Instagram. At Jordan River. IG for me. Thank you all for listening. This is Wolfman and Jordan River signing off, saying,
stay safe out there, people.
And grow smarter.
All right, just suck when I tell you to suck.
Totally. Then, <yeah. coughs>